Welcome to the Vet Med Wellness and Leadership Podcast, where we discuss central challenges vet med leaders face, such as burnout, stress, and difficult interactions with clients and staff, just to name a few. In each episode, you will hear about actionable solutions that you can apply to your practice and invitations to connect with fellow leaders who are passionate about improving the wellness of the vet med profession. By subscribing, liking, commenting, or sharing this podcast, you are helping more veterinary professionals find the resources shared in these episodes. Thank you in advance for listening and supporting this show. I hope you enjoy it. Okay. Hi, everybody. Crystal Stokes here, and I'm very excited to introduce you to Letty Cavalcante. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
And let's see, she is the head of driving operations, which is an interesting title we're going to talk more about at Waymo. I'm really happy to have her on today because she brings a very unique perspective as a woman, for one, in the operations role of being an international woman and also making a really huge career transition, which she's going to tell us more about. And in our discussion today, we will be getting into that transition, how she made it, what it was like for her. We're also going to talk about the advantages of being a woman in operations, the unique perspective she has, and also, most importantly, I think, some systems for how to deal with burnout and overwhelm in the operations role. So, Letty, I'd love to pass it over to you and have you tell us a little bit more about yourself and this current role that you're in.
True. Thank you so much, Crystal, first for the invitation to be here with you guys today. I'm head of driving operations at Waymo, and Waymo is actually, it was a Google bet. So basically Google had some of the biggest ideas that they incubate. And then once they provide proof that it can become profitable, it becomes this, what I call like your individual company. And that's what happened to Waymo some years ago. So what I do, head of driving operations, it's autonomous vehicles, basically. Before the autonomous vehicles are actually fully autonomous and they can really drive people around without a driver, I have to do a bunch of testing. And this testing are done, this testing is done basically by test drivers that are vendors that we have. And we also have program managers that make sure that we are testing everything that we need before we roll out a software that is fully driverless for the users that can be either in ride hailing or ride sharing, like we know with Uber and Lyft. Also what we do is a lot of the Waymo Via, what we call it, delivery of products and trucking as well. So really the product that we work with is the Waymo Driver, that it's the autonomous system that really the goal is to be adaptable to different types of vehicles and make the future of transportation a reality. So I'm very excited about the work I do there, and I lead the largest operations team today there, really like thousands of vendors with, we have a very big workforce to almost like 50 or 60 program managers there. So it's a pretty big team right now. And we are accomplishing a lot to be able to launch in Phoenix just like some years ago. We launched the fully driverless service in Phoenix. We're looking to new markets today. So really, really exciting to do that. A fast-paced, futuristic work in operations, which is a lot of fun, is where you see the things moving.
I think you probably never have a boring day.
That is very true. There's always something happening on the road 24/7. And I've been here for 4 years and a half. My role changed many times. In what I've seen, I could definitely write a book, Crystal.
I love that. Well, speaking of those transitions, why don't you walk us through this arc of your career? Because you did not start in operations. You started far away from operations. So tell us about that journey.
Yes, of course. Actually, I started in another country, right? I started in Brazil. I was born and raised in Brazil. I moved to America just in 2013. And what I did in Brazil, I was a lawyer in Brazil. And it's a very interesting story because I always enjoyed public speaking. I always enjoyed really connecting with people and had a very strong sense of justice. But after going to law school and working some years as a lawyer in Brazil, I started to feel that there was something missing on my day-to-day work. And those expectations were there, right, Crystal? You know, your parents invest in you up to that point for you to be there. They expect that you're going to go on your own path and grow and be a lawyer was part of like that dream that my parents had for me too. So that empty feeling that I had every day at work came from the fact that it was a lot of independent work, right? I was never working with people and I thrive working as a team. So for me, the legal degree really, it was something that I was doing well, but I wasn't passionate about. And I didn't have that passion to go to work every day and do that. When I had the opportunity to move to the US and work with operations, it was broad investigations mostly that I was working on and different teams and traveling across the globe and you know, investigating operational frauds. It was a good mix of my background with really the legal background together with the wanting to work in the team. And that's really when I fell in love with operations. But it was not an easy decision, right? Like when you invest that much in a law degree, when you pass the bar and everything is all set for you to go in that path, like stopping and changing that and taking a big bet and a big risk, It's scary. It requires quite a lot of, courage. And I think a lot of information too, right? It's not the end of the world, right? It's possible. It's actually very rewarding. I can tell you today, I am happy at work. And it took me a long time to get to this point, right? In going to work and feeling the pleasure of going to work every day. But it did require quite a lot of, you know, risk-taking.
Oh, yeah. And that's what courage is. Courage means you take action in the face of fear. The fear doesn't go away. You're still very scared, but you still take a step forward. And I also like to think about, you know, often when we have these advanced degrees, very often we can go back. You know, like you can always go back to being a lawyer if you really wanted to. So there's sort of a safety net, kind of. Not that that's always helpful. If you know that's a safety net you don't really want to go back to. But nevertheless, I think I hear the bravery in your story of you could feel inside of you there was something more that you wanted. And you just kept moving towards that, even though some of the steps in between weren't necessarily satisfying or exactly what you wanted. You might still show up to work and feel drained or like you don't want to be there. You kept moving the right direction. And now you can say, I can show up to work and I love what I'm doing.
Yes, exactly. And if I have maybe one takeaway for everybody that is listening and is considering like a career switch and something like that, I think I mentioned information because information it's really key for you to not think that this is the end of the world or is this too late for you, right? I was 30 years old when I decided to switch completely. So it's restarting in a completely different area. I think mentorship is key here, Crystal. I used a lot of LinkedIn to really reach out to people with similar backgrounds or people that made this career change. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot about like how an MBA can really enable you to do these changes. And you can meet a lot of people that are exactly interested in doing the same thing. And that's the path that I followed, right? So information is super important and really leverage LinkedIn and search for people that did what you want to do and get their perspective. I did that a bunch and it was super beneficial for me to really create that courage and drive to do it.
It's so key. And I wish that you had told me that when I was like 18, because I was one of those kids that I had a fantasy of what I thought a job would be. I wanted to be a veterinarian. I'm like, I know what it's going to be like. I'm committing everything to being a vet. And then as I started to work in the field, I learned it was very different because I never actually asked anybody. So I think when we can reach out to people that are in positions we think we want, we can ask, is the grass really greener over there where you are? Tell me, what is it like? How do you feel about your work? Give me the insider's perspective. And then if you think it sounds great, ask them for mentorship. How could I get there? And I think that, you know, a line I see through your story are people. You like to connect with people and you use that superpower to reach out, make connections, learn from them, get mentorship. And now you're in a position where you have to be mentoring others. So it's interesting, the full circle that I know of your story. So I love the takeaways you just gave for anybody in transition to really do the research, talk to people there. You can use all that knowledge to inform your path to make still risky decisions, but maybe not as risky.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what you mentioned about the VAT case, that's exactly the same with law, right? People think that you're going to be speaking in front of a judge for every single lawsuit that you have. No, it's mostly paperwork, and it's mostly you work in isolation, right? Like, depending on what path do you choose. So if I had talked to other people before, I probably would not follow this path.
Yeah.
But it's never late. It's never late, right? And I think the fact that I'm here and smiling today shows that it's never late.
Okay. Now, with this big smile, let's move into point two, which is I loved how you brought this fresh perspective of being a woman in operations, because, you know, you are a minority. And I think a lot of times when I imagine women in operations, I might hear more negativity, like, oh, you know, the world is against us. It's really hard. You know, there's so many downsides to being a woman in operations. And you were able to take those and turn them into an advantage. I'd love to hear more of how, like, what is your mindset and your perspective on being a woman in operations?
Yeah, it's a little bit, you kind of understand why this is a male-dominated, I think, environment. If you look into historically, right, the hours working 24/7, before people had that mentality that it's the woman's role to stay at home and, you know, watch the kids. This has changed significantly, and slowly we are seeing the number of women increasing in operations. And I love that because my team is extremely diverse today. I have people that they were the first drivers of the car 10 years ago that they grew inside a company, right? I have very young women that just joined the team very recently, coming from other industry areas, even not from operations, right? And having that potential of making sure that everybody is heard, because I've been in that position before and I didn't feel heard in the operations world. I think this is an advantage. This is an advantage that I feel like the fact that I can connect to people and I can create that psychological safety environment with the team where they can come to you and really open up about how they feel about things, and actually you feel that they have a voice and they are empowered to make decisions. I try to do this a lot. I try to, even when I do team events and things like that, let's not go for the vote of the majority. Let's do something that can please maybe people that are usually, you know, the minority of the voters, right? So I try to really alternate that and making sure that you are connecting and making people motivated. Because if you think about operations, is results. And the results happen when people are more motivated. You need the team engaged to be able to deliver on your results, right? If they're not engaged, it's like the culture is super important. So I'm not going to say that the culture is perfect, but I'm trying my best to try to hear everybody and empower everybody to speak up. So some of the systems I use are like skip levels, having office hours, and being able to be available to reach out directly to the women in my team to make sure that they are supported. Sometimes they get scared, like, oh, why is she messaging me? I was like, no, I just want to make sure I get some time with you to check how things are going, right? And that makes people look for you for mentorship and feel inspired in a way. And that makes me feel really good to be able to help more people that were in a position that I was before.
Oh, I love stories like this where a person arrives in a leadership role and they reflect back on their experiences of previous roles. And they think, gosh, how did I feel back then when maybe I was a minority in the company, or, you know, I didn't feel heard or supported, or I was afraid to speak up, or whatever it may be. I didn't feel confident. I didn't know how to learn the skill. I didn't know who to ask. Like, all these feelings that are very common when we are earlier in our career. We often lack confidence. We're afraid of failure. We don't want to disappoint people. We don't have a voice yet. We don't know how to set boundaries. These things that are very common. And you are able to have this like empathy for those younger folks.
Yeah, it's not only that too. If you think about the fact that think about Alphabet as a company, it's a technology company, right? So you have a lot of engineers, people that come with really famous degrees, like Ivy League schools and things like that. And at times, the operations team can feel like, you know, I feel like a second class citizen, or I feel like I don't have a voice. So working with them to really first identify what is the skill that they want to build, and in creating systems and trainings for the team, I'm trying to really upskill the team and empower them to be able to speak in public in a meeting with engineers and feel like they know what they're talking about and feeling confident about that. It wasn't easy when I moved to this country, right? Like, I came from Brazil, I spoke English, yes, but not technical English. So really going into meetings and doing fraud investigations, and in these conversations really have to point out issues with senior managers and senior leaders of organizations without feeling like I was speaking a good technical English. I really feel like if I had more mentorship at that time, I would feel much more empowered to do that. And at times I just shut down, right? And then using those learnings to really recognize that in the team, see when these people are going through a similar problem and being there for them, I think it's something that really tries to guide me during my whole journey so far.
Yeah, I can hear a lot of how the relationship piece is so important to you in your work, that you care about the people that you work with and you want them to feel like they can have a voice and that you care about them. That empathy factor, and that you're very inclusive. You know, you want everybody to feel like they're a part of it.
Yeah, this is true. I think if you think operations, you think metrics and you think results, right? But what you forget is like the human factor is really what's motion and everything else. It's what is delivering the result is actually the human behavior. If there is a miss in the process, or if that person was not aware that day, if the communications failed, the results don't come, right? So I have a lot of people in the team that are really data focused, but relationship building is really important because you need to be able to motivate. I'm talking about a team with thousands of people, right? And people from different backgrounds. What really incentivizes a group of people is not the same thing that will incentivize someone in another state or someone from a different job code, right? So you need to be able to have that I would say flexibility and understand how to engage people from different backgrounds. And I think the fact that I come from a different background really helps that.
I love how you can tie the metrics in. So, you know, sometimes we have these minds that are in one camp or the other. It's like all about relationships and I care about people, or it's all about metrics and numbers and results. And they're two separate islands. And that's a losing strategy. You know, these two things go together. So what you're saying, if I can paraphrase, you can tell me if I'm getting it right, is the results and metrics are extremely important. That's how this company stays alive. Without it, you would not have a job. This company would not exist, and we will not be making progress towards having our autonomous cars, which I would like one. But in order to have this machine running and growing, you have to have the human life force behind it that has the regular behaviors every day. They take action, they're invested, they put in the time, they do it right, they double check, they follow through, they communicate. How do you get people to want to do those things? Yeah, you can give them money, but we know very well that money is not the most effective strategy for getting people to do things. So you're looking at, not only does it make you feel like a good person to take care of people, it also is very effective in being a good leader and having the metrics and numbers that you want for this company.
That is absolutely spot on. Think about process, right? If a process is broken, or every process can be improved to help you to eliminate waste, to make you more productive, to give you better numbers. If the people that are the frontline operators are not speaking up on the issues that they are saying or giving ideas, and I think that's an important thing, they need to feel empowered to bring up issues, right? If they're not doing this, you're never going to improve the process. Like the higher level management, they will never see the details of what's broken on the floor. So it's super important that you have the people sense of identity and really passion for what they're doing. And at Waymo, what I really love about Waymo is everybody there is connected to the company's mission in some level. Someone that I know, like, lost someone that they really liked in a car accident. The other person really had a family member that couldn't drive themselves, right? So it's always that connection with the mission and the feeling empowered. And feeling empowered, it's about how included you feel into that mission, right? And exciting people to feel included in that.
I very much appreciate your message. The younger me is like, I wish you'd been my boss. Like, I'd like to have had that kind of mentorship and also female mentorship, but that sort of perspective and attitude. I think that it's really needed right now, that people are yearning for that. And that's, you know, we deal with a lot of turnover, right, in companies. And how do we have people that want to be with a company for the long run, that are really committed? You know, you want to feel like it matters to you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of dovetail this in to our third talking point, because they kind of go together to me, which is burnout. Now, I was thinking from the perspective of any of these people that you're leading, you know, that wanting to take care of them so they don't feel burned out, so they can come and speak to you and say, hey, how do I get all this done? This is a 24-hour a day job, and I can't do that. I have kids and a family. And, you know, with a growing company like that, that's an issue. But also, you know, we wanted to talk about burnout from the perspective of you being in operations, because, oh my gosh, I work with so many people in the operational position, like practice managers at veterinary hospitals, for instance, where, you know, the feeling is that we need 10 of them to get this work done, and there is one. Mm-hmm. And it's like the weight of the world on their shoulders. But we know that if they are not healthy and put their oxygen mask on, it's so cliche, but it's true, everything else starts to fall apart. That operations role is so critical. So I know I just said a lot. I don't know where you want to start, but anywhere under the umbrella of burnout, feel free to take over.
Yeah. So I am in a very interesting industry. If you think about autonomous vehicles, and many people that will listen to this podcast probably will like search about autonomous vehicles after, because I have not seen any in my state yet. So calm down, we are getting there. But I think the whole point is, like, this industry has been trying to really launch widely this product for the past 10 plus years, right? So Google has been like really working hard to develop Waymo, and really a lot of R&D has been happening since. And it can be exhausting. So at times what I say to the team is, this is not a sprint, this is a marathon. So you need breathing space, right? You need to be able to sustain your pace to the end, to the point that we launched, to the point that we are a successful company out there, right? So I think in order to do this, you need to be able to create systems, what we call breathing systems. Part of it can really come with the amazing culture of the company that you're at, right? So thinking about Alphabet in general, they have systems and programs that you can opt in, but you need as a manager to opt into these programs to create, for example, rotation opportunities, mm-hmm. or we call it bungee. Let's say someone from another team is leaving on paternity leave or something like that, and they're like, listen, I need someone to cover for me, and I would love if that person was a Waymo person. So this person can really do another job for like 6-7 months of the year, right? I think the second point there that the Alphabet does very well is what we call 20%. It's allowing the people to spend 20% of their time in a project in different groups. It's hard for me as a manager to sign up for this. It's not easy, right? It's not something that I like, okay, I will give my person for X amount of time, and I know I'm going to suffer, right? I'm going to suffer that temporary loss for a while, but I know that for them, that's the best way to not feel that burnout, having a change, right, in the middle of the way. So they're out of their day-to-day work, what they're always doing, and they learn something new. Investing in different trainings for the team. I think these are also areas that I did a little bit, but I want to do more. I want to be able to get them certifications in operations, something that really is going to be valuable for them to change the way and the perspective they see the problems. And maybe this helped them to really create those breathing systems. Like, right, if you learn data analytics, for example, maybe you can make your job much easier tomorrow by, you know, analyzing large sets of data in a much easier and faster way, more like working smarter. But even if your company does not give you these programs, nothing stops you from, I think, creating the culture in your team that you are empowered to do. And I think that one team mentality is super, super beneficial. So if we have someone that is needing support, or someone goes on the leave, or there's anything that's happening, that one team mentality of I cover you today and you cover me tomorrow, it's something that's really, really worked well. So for example, I have operations teams in Phoenix, in San Francisco. Sometimes we want to take the team out in one of the locations for an entire day, and we ask the other team to cover for them, and they know that they will have received the exact same treatment in the end, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing that, and even without the company culture really pushing you to do that, but you yourself, you can change that, right? You can create this breathing systems throughout the place. Not saying it's easy. It's never going to be easy operation, but you need to find ways to make it the path, I think, smoother throughout your journey, right? Like, you need to be able to manage and tolerate the pace to be able to run the marathon and not just a sprint and then burn out and move to the next job.
I think the marathon analogy is really helpful, that you have to pace yourself to make it to the end. And many of the professionals I work with too are just in a profession that will always be hard. There is no easy ever. There's no end. It's just, if you're in it, this is what it will be. Like, think about the medical profession, whether doctors with humans or veterinarians, it's hard. People die, they're sick, animals die, they get sick. You know, it's challenging. So how do we pace ourselves and have enough of that, like, is it breathing room and space and opportunities for some, you know, dynamic changes in order to sustain a career in that? You know, it's a long game approach, and that marathon image is really a helpful perspective when I think about it that way.
It clicks, right? And one of the things that are really, it's important that we all have in mind, I think during the pandemic, it became very evident that, like, we need our mental health in check too, when those times are, you know, tough times come. Like, pandemic was one of them. But then when you think about operations and you're thinking about a startup launching, that is the most exhausting phase that you can be as a company. You're trying to do everything you can to launch on time, right? With all the resource constraint that you might have. So it's super important that you as a leader also talk about mental health. And I did talk about mental health with the team, particularly throughout the pandemic, and talking a little bit about resources available to the employees, and really be open, right? Be vulnerable and say, listen, I'm not immune to this. Like, I had really bad days and I looked for help in this, and this really helped me. So I think being vulnerable and talking about mental health in these moments of stress is super important, and acknowledging it.
Oh, it's so helpful. I find that so often when I'm brought in to a company, it's to provide assistance building a wellness culture. And how do we just have a conversation about what that even looks like? I think there's a lot of shame around admitting that, oh, I feel burned out, or I've been having these, like, darker thoughts, or I feel super apathetic, or whatever it may be. There's a, you know, or I have anxiety. I feel fearful a lot. I feel apprehensive. So it's just be able to have this, like, transparency that's part of the human experience. And when we build a wellness culture, it's just as important as any other aspect of the company. Those humans that drive everything forward, being able to feel and operate at their best. And that's just one piece of the puzzle. Like, we're just talking about this giant puzzle. I feel like we could just continue this conversation for, like, 6 hours, because it's so interesting. I love how you're a systems thinker, that you have this very practical side of you that sees numbers and systems and metrics, and then you marry it together with a very human aspect of what you've experienced in your past and what you want to bring as a leader and as a woman to your field. If you don't mind, I'll ask you just a couple of rapid fire questions, because I'm dying to know. I think other people might want to know too.
Yeah.
Being a woman in such a busy role, all right, you got a lot going on. Do you have any self-care or just habits or practices that you might do on a regular basis that really help keep your cup full, keep you at your best?
Yes. And that's a funny question, because if you asked me 3 years ago, I would say I was always at the peak of stress, and at times I couldn't recognize myself. Like, this is not me, right? I'm losing my patience very easily. During the pandemic, I actually discovered yoga. So yoga is, like, now my favorite practice, and it really, I am trying to do that at least 5 times a week, which is a huge commitment. I try to do my sessions, and I meditate as part of it. And I think that really helped that mental health side of it. Really, sometimes before I answered to an email, I was like, I'm going to do my yoga and I'll answer to this email after. And I can see the difference of, you know, being back to your real you and in your control again. And, you know, after going through meditation and being able to think about things in more rationally speaking, and, you know, this habit really a big practice on my mind. The second one is a passion. It's cooking. I cook a lot. I make big dinners for big groups. Once I served more than 300 people, and I was very, very happy about this pop-up that I did. I do usually some Brazilian dishes that are my favorite, but I like to try and cook every single thing you can imagine. So I am a foodie. I like to go to restaurants and cook a lot, which is why I need the yoga.
Woman, I'm going to come find you and like make you cook for me. That sounds so fabulous.
Yeah, it's kind of therapy for me.
Yeah, I hear it. It reminds me of when I work with clients that are looking for ways to feel more grounded, using the five senses is so helpful. And all the things you named really incorporate the senses of the body, right? Like yoga gets you so in your body and you're breathing, you're really feeling your body. And then the meditation, like just be fully present in here and now, what do you hear? And then cooking, like smell and taste. So you're using all of your senses. And it's really neat that you've tapped into that and it really works for you. So people listening, please find practices that you can do that bring you back home to yourself, that help you reconnect and feel grounded. One last thing I'd like to ask you would be for those people listening that may want to know more about, hey, this whole thing around operations, how to thrive while I'm in operations, trying to find more of those advantages to whatever their position may be. If they wanted to connect with you and maybe seek out mentorship or just to connect in any way, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, so definitely my LinkedIn profile. I'm Leti Cavalcante there. And if you look Waymo Leti, you will definitely find me there. I am very open to mentor people. I have currently four mentees. I'm mentoring four women now. Not all of those are Latino, but some, like more than half, Latina. But I'm open to really mentor anyone or have any conversations and coffee chats too. I met a lot of strangers from LinkedIn for coffee chats or really career conversations. One off, some of them really became good resources, and today we are peers or colleagues or working, you know, for the competitor sometimes, and we can still, you know, have a good relationship. And it's I'm super open to any conversation or anything you want to hear from me or about autonomous vehicles too, because that's another passion I have.
I love it. Okay, that's fabulous. So everybody, I will put that in the show notes so you don't have to go hunting for it. I'll put her LinkedIn profile there. I know from experience that she will respond to you. If you send her a message and say hello, she will get back to you. So it's a great way to connect. And Letty, I just really appreciate you spending the time with us today. I think that you have such an interesting and unusual story, but it also is very applicable to so many people going through transitions and just trying to find their way, you know, through this world of, you know, being a leader and how to really show up in a way that you can actually want to come to work and feel good about it every day. So thank you for your time today.
Yeah. And thank you, Krista, for the invitation. I love the work that you're doing. I think it's so important, and it really, I can't read or listen enough about this topic, right? Like, I think women and the fact that women in operations, it's such a minority still. There's so much to be talked about. I really appreciate that there are people like you that are digging for answers and trying to help and make this a more diverse field too.
I agree. I envision having one day like a roundtable discussion, like recorded just like this, to share with a bunch of women in the room. They're in operations positions in all these different industries, to just mine for those gold nuggets of how we can support each other and make this better. Because I think that there is something bigger happening here. And I love these conversations because I think we're getting closer to figuring out what that is.
We definitely are. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for joining me today. I hope that you feel stoked after listening to this episode. And as always, I would love to hear your comments and feedback. Is there a topic that you want to know more about? Please let me know. And thank you again for subscribing and sharing your favorite episodes with others. It really means a lot.